What's up, planner lovers? It's your girl Sharice, and I'm back for this week's episode of the Plan on Purpose podcast. This week we have photographer and avid scrapbooker Azari Jarrett. And when I tell you she is bomb, I mean, her story is amazing. She's sharing with us how she came into this amazing world of scrapbooking and documenting, and how her children have inspired her not just to speak up for herself, but for her entire community. You don't want to miss this. Hey, if you like what you're hearing today, make sure you share it with a friend. Head on over to Plan on Purpose on Instagram and let me know how this episode resonated with you. Let's get into it. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me this week. Introduce yourself to my audience and tell them a little bit about the amazing things that you do.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I really enjoy talking shop. but my name is Azari Jarrett. I am a photographer and designer. I live on the North Carolina coast with my husband and three girls. My girls are 14, 10, and 7. And definitely dominate my life, as well as they are my greatest work and my biggest blessings. So I enjoy capturing my life, capturing simple moments, and I also enjoy designing products for documenting. And just most recently, I've become more active in trying to increase diversity in products. So I guess that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, I'm definitely here for your increase in diversity. I used one of your stamp sets in some memory journaling that I was doing, some documenting that I was doing, and I saw the one that you did, and it was talking about curly hair, don't care. And I was like, oh, it's not just for me, it's because my son has curly hair too. So Yeah. That's great to see, especially because, like you said, you have girls and you don't see a lot of things tailored towards little boys, but I was able to kind of take that and use it, and it was amazing. How did you get into scrapbooking and or documenting? How did you get into that?
Yeah, so I come from a creative household. And when I say creative, I mean my mom. She was always, she always had some kind of creative outlet. So I remember she picked up scrapbooking, but it was with the big puffy stickers and huge layouts that I wasn't really feeling. And she's done Bible journaling and art journaling and painting. So, I always had access to these things. And so I saw how she held down a full-time job, but she also needed this creative outlet. So I think some kind of way that was instilled in me. And I got into scrapbooking with the pregnancy of my third pregnancy, actually, with my daughter, my third girl. And I was actually looking for an outlet to kind of document that pregnancy. And I didn't want a traditional baby book because I wanted something more focused on me, something where I could tell my my story. And I think around that time I came across Project Life Pages, and that made sense to me. And then that's a way I felt that I could scrapbook. And at that time I was taking a lot of photos, so I could combine my photos with words. And that was the simplest, most minimalistic version that really spoke to me. And that was 7 years ago. And and ever since then, I mean, I've moved into traveler's notebooks and 8.5 by 11 albums. And I've picked up a little bit of painting. Like it starts so many creative juices that that's how that's how I got into scrapbooking and documenting in general. And then I started serving on design teams, which really opened me up to the industry of things that were out there. And I learned a lot, but also it took a lot of time.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of work. I think a lot of people see kind of that side of it, and they're thinking about the products that you may get or how you'll be able to use some of the things. But there's so many things that go into being part of these teams, whether you're representing or designing. It's a lot, but you were definitely talented, especially with your photography and your design. How did you even get into photography?
Yeah, that, so that again, like, as I mentioned before, I have three girls. So with the birth of each of my girls kind of, introduced a different creative outlet for me. So, when I had my oldest, I remember I hired a photographer. This was 14 years ago. I hired a photographer to come and take newborn photos of her. And I remember he came to the house and he set up everything. And I just remember thinking, I can do that. And so it started from there, right? And motherhood hit me hard. Like it going from everything being about me to everything being about her, photography allowed me to document my new life and see things that I wasn't seeing before because I was different now. Now I was a mom. So I needed some creative outlet. And at the time that was photography. So I bought my first digital SLR and started to use that. I think that was back in the days of Flickr. And so I had found a lot of communities that I resonated with and other like-minded individuals, learned a lot. But then I got pregnant with my second and digital photography wasn't cutting it for me. I needed, again, now I was different. I was a mom of two. You know, I had a 4-year-old and a newborn. So I needed another way to kind of pivot and to feed that creative need. And I remember spending a lot of time editing my photos. So I had a digital SLR and I would take like a million photos and then I would spend 3 hours trying to make them look like film. And one day it was just like, Azari, why don't you just shoot with film? And that day I got on eBay, and at the time film cameras were cheap because everybody was trying to get rid of them. And
yeah, because they weren't the new thing anymore. It's like, oh, digital now? I don't have to do all this like you know, fancy film stuff. Yeah, take my camera.
Absolutely. I've seen them like creep up, but at the time I think I bought a film camera. This was my first camera. I bought a Pentax K1000 for like $35. She's 10, so that was 10 years ago. And I remember just learning how to load the film. And I carefully composed like 24 exposures and sent them off to be developed, and it was empty. And so I felt like it was new. I was learning something new. And from that point on, I just loved film photography. And that kind of changed the game for me. And what's ironic is that learning to shoot with a manual camera where I had to set all the settings helped me for my digital camera, because now I understood what all those settings meant. And then that led to instant photography. I've dabbled in everything, medium format photography. So that's.
And you taught yourself all of this?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was just.
That's so amazing.
It was just out of sheer needing something that was strictly for me. In my new role as a mom of two And then as a mom of three, and then scrapbooking just allowed me to combine those two loves. And I always remind people, I identify as a photographer first. I know a lot of people know my like documenting and scrapbooking work, but it for me, it always comes back to the photography. It always comes back to the story. And I think that's another reason why film speaks to me is because when I see, this is like a pet peeve of mine, if there's a beautiful scene or something and I'm with someone, a friend, and they're like, oh, look how beautiful that is. Take a picture. And I'm like, no, that's your picture. You know, you take that picture, you know, because it speaks to you. And so that's what film does for me. It, not so much that I'm trying to take an aesthetically beautiful photo, but I'm trying to preserve the mood or the feeling that I have before I click that shutter, which may or may not speak to anyone else. But I feel like that is my goal. So that when I look at that, that's why a lot of my layouts are just a photo, because I can look at that and remember the entire story.
I love that about your photography. That's one of the things I noticed when I found you, is that I was like, oh, her layouts are really simple. And they also are very they're dynamic. You can look at them and see there was something happening here. And it wasn't just about get together and take a cute picture. It was really about the scene itself. And also, I think because I've said this before, 12 by 12 pages, like, they scare me. Like, they do. I look at that and I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of blank space. Right. I need some guides. I need some something. And I noticed that when I build layouts that I do for like memory journaling off of the photo, everything else just comes out.
Yes.
It's not about what color scheme or stickers, or it just comes out because it's about the story. I really appreciate that about your style. When you started to take photos and become really good at it, when did you know, like, okay, like, I'm a photographer now. This is a thing. This is the business. Because I've even seen like some of your albums and things that you have on your website. Like, when did you know this is something that isn't just a hobby or whatever it started as, this creative way. Now this is serious and this is a business for me, and I'm pursuing it.
It's part decision and part life circumstances. So it was, I think this is why I'm not like a portrait photographer or a wedding photographer, is because at the end of the day, I always like to take photos that speak to me. And so I knew if I were to make a business of this, I wanted people to see my vision and not have to shoot what someone else wanted to see. So, I don't want to take a picture of you looking at me smiling. There's a joke in our family that I actually don't want people in my photos. And so my husband always teases me because he's like, Azari is always like, to the left, to the left, to the left. Perfect. Click.
So you can get out of the frame.
You know, and because I think like early on, like I got family friends hired me to take family pictures, and that wasn't my thing. You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I knew I wanted, if I were going to make this a business, I wanted to take photos that spoke to me. And if you like that, you know, if that's your cup of tea, then sure, buy the photos or support my work. But I never wanted to go down the rabbit hole of having other people decide or direct my vision. When I had, everything comes back to my girls. I worked full time up until I had my third daughter. And at that point, I could hold it down with two, but the third kind of pushed me over the edge of, I wasn't sleeping through the night, but I still had a second grader and a 3-year-old. And I realized I couldn't keep going at this pace. And once I had that realization, you know, I talked to my husband and I was like, I think I can make a go of this. I think, you know, at the time I had an Etsy shop. I was doing some design work, some freelance work, and I felt I could really make this a business. And that really worked out for me. And I've, I think I've officially, I lasted until my youngest was about a year and a half, almost two. So it's been about 5 years now. And it's worked out so well. I've had a lot of great experiences and it, yeah, I still get to take pictures of what I enjoy and let other people see that vision, which I love. So
now, would you say you've accomplished that through just sharing your photography as a whole, being creative and sharing what you do, and then things kind of picked up from there? Or would you say that there was a specific, like, I'm going to make a book, I'm going to create, you know, did you have a like strategic plan, or I'm going to make this and then sell this, or I'm just going to just do what I do and share it? Yes. And then we're going to go from there.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head right there. I'm going to do what I do and share it. For me, social media kind of changed the game. And I realized that I got found by a lot of companies. I mean, say what you want about social media. I go back and forth. But no one sees your work unless you share your work. And I am mm-hmm. very selective with what I share and what I let out. If you notice, you won't find my girls that much on my feed. And that is because I want to respect them and their story. You know, me choosing to put my work out has nothing to do with them. Every opportunity that I've gotten comes from sharing my work online. And it's kind of a love-hate relationship, because I will sometimes become just inundated and I pull away. You know, I'm very introverted in that aspect. And then there'll be some times when I'm really on that creative wave and I'm sharing and work is just coming and I'm sharing and I'm sharing. But yeah, every opportunity, I didn't set out with a game plan. It just mostly came out with sharing my work online, making connections. Sometimes it was me reaching out to certain people or companies and saying, hey, here's a look at my work. I'm here. And especially being a Black woman, sometimes you have to put yourself out there. You have to reach out, because if you don't, the most they can say is no. And if you do, they, you know, pick up your work or ask you to design a collection. But by far, the success that I've had comes from social media.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I think I understand what you mean. I definitely understand what you mean about social media kind of having that back and forth about it, because it can be such a great place to be, and you find and discover all these people. I mean, just similar stories of building with social media. That's what I'm doing. That's how I found you and a lot of the people that I speak with on the podcast, right? And develop these relationships and friendships, and we get to share and talk about these amazing things together. But it can also have some very negative sides to it. But I think I've learned that it's a tool, and it's how you use it. And if you aren't careful with your curation of the content that you see, it can begin to feel like it's out of control.
Right. Absolutely.
But you are the curator. That's like walking into a museum or a gallery that someone owns, and they tell you that they hate everything that's in it. And it's like, well, why is it in here? Like, you put this stuff in here for everyone else to see and for you to enjoy. If you're not enjoying it when you put it up or when you interact with it, nobody else is going to enjoy it. Absolutely. Well, not that some people could enjoy it, but it might be for them. It's not for you. So they'll find somebody else if you're not the person that's doing it. So I kind of equate it to that, like using it as a tool and understanding when you have curated something that's not for you, and being okay with the fact that, like, okay, I did this. I don't have to engage in these things. I can move that over here and go back to what brings me my peace.
and be comfortable with that. But I love what you're saying about just being creative and creating for yourself. I've started to say that a lot with the things that I do with journaling, because it can be a comparative game where you're looking at other people or you're trying to weigh the cost of doing what you want versus how much money you'll get as a wedding photographer or as someone who, you know, does certain types of layouts. And it's like, no, I'm gonna do me. And I love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of kind of what you've been doing for yourself, I, as I said before, I purchased journaling cards and stamps, and I love your Black Lives Matter stamps and all these things. You said that you recently kind of got more into diversity. What made you create this specific line?
Yeah, so thank you for asking, and I'm glad you enjoy the products. I think it stems from being in the industry for 7 years and never once coming across a product that was designed for me or with me in mind. And just personally, I think it's having girls, it's the importance of representation is huge for me. So I never use, you know, because our skin is brown and our hair is curly, I never use, you know, a peace sign with a pale hand, or I always paint it in or color it brown, or, you know, I don't use rad in my vocabulary. That's just not something I say. And so if I get another card with rad, you know, I'm going to pull my hair out.
Or girl power, or.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's just not something.
Not my vocabulary.
We say, or I, right. And so why would I put that in my documenting? I wouldn't. That's the answer is I wouldn't. And I realized that, the same people who are designing the products are the same people sitting on the panels, are the same people in that own the companies, are the same people that have, you know, these conferences. So, and when you have just like similarity like that, everything you do will be the same. And so I got tired of it. I got tired of it. Like, you know, like you said, we have curly hair. I am always going to stand by that, especially because I'm trying to exemplify something for my daughters. So it was more, you know, there are a number of scrapbooking companies out there who are great and who do it right. So I'm not trying to recreate the wheel here. All I designed this product release for was to make a statement that these products are wanted, they're needed in the industry, and that they can sell out because so many people want things that are a reflection of them. And it's just representation is lacking. And I'm starting to see a shift in how people design things, who are designing things or products, but the scrapbooking industry is largely a white stay-at-home mom industry. Yeah. And I just wanted to bring to the forefront that there are different people. There are males, there are men who scrapbook. There are disabled body people that scrapbook. There are Asian Americans that scrapbook. And everyone just wants to use products that are created with them in mind. So it was more just trying to make a point and not trying to steal, you know, customers or what have you. And I have a design background. So I worked as an interaction designer. So I know how to design these products. It was just, now I had to get them manufactured and now I have to deal with shipping. And, you know, I'm just one person here with three girls,
right?
You know, and a husband. Right. And, you know, and I already have this photography business going on. So it was more of trying to just make that statement. All that being said, you know, I design more things that I want to put out into the world. But it was just, it just came from a need of wanting to see products that were reflective of me. And that's it. And I, and then I recently saw, another, a product release, designed or targeted at Muslim women, which I'm excited to see as well. But I just feel like, we just need to acknowledge that scrapbooking, it can be for anyone.
Yeah.
And, I think I made that clear that if you create these products, there's a market for them.
Yes. I think about that a lot when I'm planning, because there are certain things mm-hmm. that I say or do, and there are certain shops that like I shop from all the time as far as like stickers go, because when I see that, I'm like, that's me. I say that all the time. I like that show. What I mean? And so like even just the small idea of something like 90s themed, where it's like, oh, just create something 90s themed. But then you take what other people might see as 90s themed, that's just the colors and the this. 90s for the Black culture was, that was it. It was R&B, it was hip hop, it was all these shows. It was Living Single. It was Martin. It was a different world.
Thursday night was our night. Yes.
And so like, how do you design something that has a 90s feel to it without putting any of those things in there? Like everything 90s is not Saved by the Bell. And you know what I mean? And so and mind you, I still also took in that content as well. I watched Saved by the Bell. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's just a certain thing. So when you start to see like more people going, oh yeah, you know, That's something that I designed this because this is what I used to watch. And this is what I see when I see 90s, or this is what I see when I see early 2000s, or I think about college or whatever, children, whatever. And I'm loving seeing more of it. Not because, like you said, it makes me not want to purchase anything from another shop, you know, or it makes me not want to look at someone else.
Absolutely.
I'm just like, that's me. And I'm looking at my planner all the time. I want to see me. So I absolutely understand that.
As you should. Yeah. As you should. I just, and I've heard the point come up that, you know, certain designers can't do certain sayings because it's not culturally appropriate. So then, you know what? You hire a designer.
Come on.
You know,
like who fits that?
You hire,
and they can come out and say, cause if I see, sometimes I see certain things and I'm like, ooh, do you know what that means? Like, I'm not even trying to be funny, but like, that's like, think about it. Like what we do and how we do things, it's literally a different language. And so that's like, I speak French, right? That's like someone who doesn't speak French putting together a sentence and selling a sticker pack or selling a documenting pack with it. Do you know what you're saying? You don't. Like,
hello.
And it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
That you don't know. You wouldn't do that. Just, you wouldn't hire someone who spoke a complete, I only speak English. Okay, great. Can you design this German scrapbooking kit for me? They would be like, I can't do that. I don't speak that language.
No. Right. Absolutely. And I feel that our culture, people like our culture, but they like to pick and choose the parts of our culture that they would like to consume or to stay away from or differentiate themselves from. But we don't have that opportunity to separate ourselves.
Nope.
And so when we want things that are reflective of us, I don't think it's huge. I mean, with just after last summer in the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, so many people found me online, and I made sure to share that with all these other Black creatives who are out here. Like, we didn't just
appear
in June 2020. You know what I'm saying? If you look back at my feet, look back at my work, I've been doing this for years. I've been here. You just haven't seen.
Because you weren't looking for me.
You haven't seen us.
You weren't looking.
Exactly.
You're going to find what you're looking for.
Because
you're not looking for us.
You're going to find what you're looking for. And then you're going to give opportunities to people who look like you or who make you comfortable. But we've always been here. And all we're asking for is a shot at the table, a shot or a seat at the table. And so I've had a lot of you know, some of my creative Black friends who once, you know, we got all this exposure, they started feeling guilty for accepting the positions that were coming at them now, because then, you know, that imposter syndrome starts to sit back. Or is it just because I'm Black that they want me on this? Or, and I was like, no, this is what we've been fighting for. We can't make systematic change from the outside. So we have to make it from the inside. So you take that position, you design that collection, you sit on that design team, you get on that board, and that's how we make change.
Yeah.
And I just feel that finally it's here. Sometimes it's still falling on deaf ears, but you know, Black creatives have been out here for literally years. And like you said, you know, I watch Saved by the Bell. We consume all types of information and product.
Yes.
We've supported companies for years. And it's not an if or or. There's room for everyone. You know, it's not binary. You know, just because there is a collection designed for Black women does not take anything away from you.
Yes.
Just like if there is a collection designed for able-bodied people versus disabled, that there's room for everyone. And so,
and Black people are not a monolith. There's so many.
Yes.
I mean, there's just there's layers. You may design.
There's layers.
There's so many different types, so many different layers. You may design something that looks like this. Like, I think about how every time I found out about a thing or a group that I belong to that I think, oh, there's not that many. Then I go, wait a minute. We here. Like, for example, I've talked about this plenty of times. I'm a huge Star Wars, Harry Potter. I'm a fantasy geek. I love all of these things. I recently found out about, you know, Black nerds. Like, that's a whole thing. And I'm like, wait a minute. Because if somebody would tell me in high school, like, when I was walking around with the Harry Potter books in my book bag, that this was a thing, that I wasn't just a weird kid. I was actually like part of this community of Black people who love sci-fi and fantasy. Like, we, in every time. So you, instead of just thinking like, oh, I have to create these things, like when you're making these, you know, these products that are geared towards certain niches, I guess we're in there too. We are in that. We're in that too. And so it's so great to it's
like,
great to,
you know,
see it now.
We're there. Black people scrapbooking. There are Black people who watch birds. You know, there are Black people who ski. There are Black people who are into sci-fi. You know, you can't box anyone in, you know, anymore. And so and especially when you start to have children, you realize I will take so much internally for myself, but if there is anything any one of my girls wants to do, I want them to be able do it. I don't want them to stop because they don't see anyone that looks like them not reflected back. You know, I think once we have kids, we take a lot of risks and we speak up because we want to see a change for them.
Yeah.
And
because I don't want to live in a world where my son wants to do something and he has a ceiling created for him before he even.
Yes.
See, because we go through a lot of those things. Like, you've talked about your transition into photography. Like, I've come to this, what I'm doing, through many different avenues and careers, and that's going to happen.
Yes.
But I don't want a ceiling to be created for him. I want him to go through that and say, maybe this isn't for me, or maybe this isn't something I want to do. Maybe I'm going to try this over here, but not to be boxed in and say, you're only allowed to try these things. I want him to see whatever he wants to do and say, I'm going to try that. With no hesitation and no fear of failure because of what he looks like.
Yes, absolutely. I 100% agree. What really made me stop was that I think I had gotten a stamp with a face on it, and the face was just like the eyes, nose, and mouth, and it didn't like stop. Or I didn't think twice about picking up a paintbrush and like drawing a brown face and then stamping. And I realized like that shouldn't be normal, you know, shouldn't be normal. Like I shouldn't have to make a big deal about wanting, you know, a brown face or wanting curly hair or wanting when my girls, you know, when I try and encourage them, I give them scrapbooks. I want them to be reflected, and I don't want them to stop because everything they see, you know, is not them.
Yeah.
You know, we get enough of that. We get enough of that. I'm really big on in this house, we are inclusive and everyone is to feel safe and supported. And so I guess, and that's why I do what I do at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it's, and like I said, I love it. I love it. I definitely do. You had opportunities to talk about this with the New York Times. That was an amazing article. What was that like for you?
That was huge. It was exciting, scary, and great all at the same time. And just want to thank Michelle Garcia for reaching out to me for that story and for telling that story, because I think it's one that needed to be heard in this industry. And it just stemmed out of I was calling on a large scrapbooking company to just acknowledge the fact that they had a diverse customer base, you know? And so is there anything, you know, or what are you doing internally to address, you know, the systematic racism that exists? And, I simply wanted an answer, and that question was deleted and it kind of started a ball rolling. And, I remember thinking, when I posted the question, I remember thinking, okay, this is going to be a mass exodus of people. And if that's what it takes, I am who I am at the end of the day. This is me. I can't not ask. And I remember going to bed that night. And when I woke up, I had so much, it was the exact opposite of what I thought. You know, I had so much support from women, from other scrapbookers in the industry that I knew. And then it kind of caught wind that, hey, this is a problem. This is a problem, and let's address it. And I got just so many, like I keep a folder on my computer. Actually, there have been black women who have, you know, emailed me, and I still get notes of I've been scrapbooking for 30 years and I have never seen products like this.
Wow.
Or it is so refreshing to read this, you know? And when you think about it that way, I was just like, this is just amazing. For so long, I think we accept the fact that we will not be represented, and that needs to change, because it's not right. And this is an industry, I think, that is ready for it. Because as a whole, I feel like the scrapbooking industry is a very supportive one. Like, there's not a lot of cancel culture or calling out. I've, you know, just followed some other, you know, communities where, you know, they
chop you off.
Take women.
Yeah, chop you off at the knees.
Exactly.
Don't come to the planet community, girl, because we ruthless, okay?
Exactly.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still an amazing community. I love these women that I've met, and I love being part of it. But you got to have some thick skin, honey, because you come in here talking about the wrong stuff or the wrong product or mentioning the wrong thing, they will chew you up and spit you right on out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's exactly it. And so I feel like, you know, pretty much everything, anytime someone comes out with something, it's always, you know, received well or perceived, you know, it's great. And, you know, it's all light and love, you know, but it's not light and love for some people, you know. And to think that I walk through the world like you, or I'm enjoying every kit like you are. No, that's not true. And so I think we need to bring light to that.
Absolutely.
And And of course I got criticism because that's what it is whenever you put yourself out there. But I just remember after Kamala Harris was sworn in as vice president, I think I posted a picture, and it was amazing to me the amount of people who left. And I wholeheartedly, I actually, please leave if you don't agree with my content. But it was amazing to me because nothing else had changed other than that post. And I realized that people think they can consume my content, i.e. look at my pictures, buy my work, look at my layouts, buy my products, but not acknowledge who I am. I'm a Black woman educated at an HBCU, a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority.
Come on, talk like, about it.
All the same thing, all the same things as Kamala.
Yes. Yes.
But you don't like her. That you know, I can't. Then you can't like me.
There it is.
You know, and so you, I can't separate the two. I guess is what I'm trying to say is I create all of this work. I photograph the things that I do and design the products that I do. Those are all based off of my lived experiences. Yeah. And if you can't acknowledge that, or if you disagree with that, then, you know, I don't see how you can, you know, follow me or follow my work, because this is who Absolutely. I am. This is who I am. And I, you know, I'm just tired of being overlooked because of that. Or you can not look here, but look there, you know, or take this part. But
I'm a whole person.
You know, I created this. Absolutely. And everything I have been through goes into that photo you see.
See, that's what I'm talking about. You can't just take the pieces that you like. And then you'll quickly find out that like there's other things here, and either you're gonna consume it or you're not, and that's just what it is. I want to talk a little bit more about your photography and your scrapbooking as it pertains to like your design. How has it changed since you kind of first started?
Well, as I mentioned before, I think I started out digitally with a digital SLR. And along the way, I was just like, you know, if I take 200 photos, surely, you know, two of them will be good. And I didn't like that. It was draining. It took up a lot of space. And that is when I switched to film, because I was trying to make my images look like film. And film fulfilled that need for me. I think a lot at the beginning, I was taking a lot of photos of my daughter. And then I started to take photos of my life. And that kind of changed the game for me when I just wanted simple everyday moments. I didn't want a big production. I'm very much drawn to shadows and light. To me, that's like the realest people. I know my mom always says this. Whenever I want to capture a moment, I tell her, turn the light off. And she's like, what? You know, cause it's, I want that natural light. I want that realness. And so that's the main way and because when your friends or your family know that you like photography, or they know that you always have a camera, there's a tendency, oh, can you take these, you know, family photos? Can you, and I did that early on, but it helped hone in on what I liked and what I didn't like. And for me, that was creating on demand versus creating what I saw or I wanted to document or remember. I think that's a whole different level of stress that I did not want to put on my creativity.
I can see that. How do you manage it all? Because you've got the business, you just said you are jumping into being more outspoken about your diversity and all of these things. How do you manage doing all of that?
I feel like I'm that duck swimming that looks, you know, pristine, and underneath the water, there's like, you know, I'm just flapping away. I don't think, you know, I'm just, I'm like every other mom. I feel like my calendar is like a 3D matrix. I try and do my best. At the end of the day, my girls are first. I'm there for my family first, and I try and fit in things as I have to. And I just know that I have to do something a little bit creative every day, even if it means coming in here and moving a few things around. I am my best self whenever I create, and I have to have that time. So a lot of times my husband and my girls know that. So when I'm in my studio, they kind of leave me alone. But I try and block out times. I'm also a guest instructor for Allie Edwards' One Little Word class this year.
And I know. I'm so excited. I gotta get in there. I haven't yet, but I saw that and I was like, oh, I'm in there. Yeah, I'm in there.
You know, and I will say, seeing that side of the industry and what goes into like a year-long class is I'm growing immensely from it. Just connecting to all of the other instructors and working collaboratively, I feel like, yes, you know, these are my people. I'm not even going to lie. I have trouble managing it all because I feel like being in a creative space, you know, sometimes I feel it and sometimes I don't. And the one thing that zaps my creativity, and I've found this just based on experience, is putting a deadline on it. And once a deadline is associated, I feel, okay, now I've switched to work. And so it's a fine line for me. And so I think I mentioned this before, is that when I am I know my creativity ebbs and flows. So I try to create enough passive income so that on those times when I'm not pushing out work, I'm still able to kind of lean on that wave versus I know it's coming back. And when it does, you know, I'm trying to push out layouts and design products and get photos ready. So I wish I had the answer, but I'm still trying to figure it out myself.
I love that you actually said, you know, I know that my creativity ebbs and flows. I love that because I think sometimes we like to believe that we can just turn it on. Like it's a switch. Yes. And sometimes it is, but you're probably in one of those like higher times. Mm-hmm. And then you're wondering why there are other times you can't flip the switch.
Yes.
And it may just be because it's not there and it's okay. And I love that you've put in place some things to help you because you're like, maybe this is not such a high time of creativity for me and I need to kind of back it up. That's great advice. And I'm going to take that and I'm going to hold that. I'm going to hold that right here because I need that.
Yeah.
That's it for this week's episode of the Plan on Purpose podcast. Of course, I want to thank Azari for stopping by and sharing her story with us. As always, I was completely inspired. And if you want to see some of the amazing photo stories that I've been posting, make sure you stop by Plan on Purpose on Instagram and tell me what you think. If you want to see more of what Azari's doing, her photos are so bomb. And I absolutely love the way she uses them for memory keeping. Check the show notes and make sure you stop by and tell her that you came to say hi from the Plan on Purpose podcast. As always, make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. I'm always here to talk if you're here to listen.